Well, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations, and thank you for joining us on our Facebook broadcast. And for those of you who are watching on our recorded session of this broadcast, either on Facebook, on YouTube, or on our podcast. Tonight, our special guest is Dara. Now, I forgot to ask you how to say your last name.
Hallier.
Okay.
Hallier.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to let her say it because from Abiding Truth Ministry. Welcome, Dara.
Thank you. And I appreciate you having me tonight. I'm looking forward to this next hour.
I am too. This is going to be fun. And I just thank you for talking to us about marriage. And that's something that we should be talking about all the time and working on, definitely. I know a lot of our community does struggle with their marriages, because as parents who have children with special needs and sometimes special needs of their own, which I know you're very familiar with, it makes marriage an even more difficult relationship. And so we're going to delve into some of those things too tonight. So I thought I would start out by just having you give our audience a brief introduction of who you are and why you're passionate about talking about marriage and just kind of the basis behind it and anything else that you want to share to get us started.
Okay, thank you very much. I've been married to my husband, Tracy, for 33 years. I did not come from a Christian home and so didn't have a real example of it. And if you've ever looked through your Bible, there's not a book called Marriage 101. It would be nice if there were. Parenting 101 would fit right in there. And so God blessed us. We started off in ministry when we first married, had five little boys very quickly. So we had five children under the age of seven, twins at the end surprised us. And all five of them have special needs. We have Asperger's, ADHD, dyslexia, dysgraphia, you name it. We've got it going on, which means, you know, his daddy and I are probably both have quite a bit of that as well. So learning to relate to one another, to work together in our marriage in order to be able to parent these children, and being able to show that front, you know, that we're together for them in that. And there was a time that I thought, I'm leaving, I'm out of here, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I'll just to tell you a real quick story. I was on my knees on a couch. My husband was in the ministry at the time. And I said, God, I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. And his presence pulled away from me. And I realized then that if I pulled away from my marriage and my husband, because there was not abuse and there was not adultery going on, just a lot of control, that I was walking away from my God. And about 5 seconds of not having his spirit was enough. And I got back on my knees and I said, okay, God, figure this out. What do we do? And we did go to counseling. I went to figure out some of the abuses of my childhood. My husband went to figure out how to live with me. And that's been 12 years ago. And I would say our marriage is stronger and we've learned some of those communication skills. And it's the joy, the security, the oneness, the that we have not only as a couple but as a family. I think it's something that is important to our kids and our grandkids as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a good point too. That, you know, it isn't the good times always that strengthen our marriage. It's those times that we struggle and we stick it out. Yes. And we cling to God and we work on those things. And that's probably a lot about, you know, the basis of what we're going to be talking about tonight is those struggling points and how to turn them around to be strengths versus looking at them the way the world looks at them and say, that's a reason to get out.
Right.
You know, and that's the easy way, unfortunately, but it's not God's way.
To
handle that. You know, like you said, there are some reasons that God does allow that out. But that has to be looked at from a very critical point of view.
Right. And we can't ever think that I'm going to get out of this and I'm going to be okay. Because it's ripping apart. It's God said, you know, we become one flesh. Yeah. And when that divorce happens or that separation happens, there's a ripping there and it will affect for the rest of your lives.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
definitely
marriage matters to God. It matters to our society. It matters to the parents. It matters to the children, and it makes a difference if we can hang in there and hang on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do it joyfully.
Thank you. Amen. So I just want to let our viewers know that we're going to be taking questions during this whole time. So if you have any questions or comments that you want to add to the feed, definitely do that. And we can bring them up and we can answer them, talk about them while we're going on. And so feel free to just put those in at any time that you want to, at least for those of you that are watching live. If you're listening to the recorded session, I'm sorry, we're going to miss that. But you can always send one of us an email too. So please. We'll share. I do want to share your website though. It is abidingtruthministry.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, and I'm going to bring that up to show here on our, let's see if I can make it a little bit easier to see. So that's what it looks like.
And I do have a blog page on there, and our store is on there for some of the books that we've written.
Awesome. Yeah. And you have a couple other resources that we'll share probably later on, specifically relating to a couple of the topics that you said that would be good to cover in this.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, you know, since our topic is marriage matters, why don't we start out with marriage matters to who and why?
Okay. First of all, I believe marriage matters to God. He's the one that instituted this very first marriage between Adam and Eve, and it was set up to the whole society is really set up on the marriage and the family. Mm-hmm. And then we also look at how Jesus relates to the church. He relates as the groom, and mm-hmm. we are the bride. And mm-hmm. so you can see both of those illustrations that marriage matters to God. There is something about him that he wants to draw that faithful, that untainted, that pure love to himself. Mm-hmm. Our God is a God of love, and love needs a reciprocant. Mm-hmm. And we get the awesome opportunity of being the recipient of God's great love. And wow. so a faithful, pure marriage is important to God because it's also demonstrating his love for us and his relationship to us.
Yeah, it shows other people an example that normally we can't see, and we can't see God himself, but as a marriage, we are supposed to be a reflection of what that relationship should look like. We don't do it perfectly, definitely, but
we're learning. We're in progress, and that's okay. We're in process. I think marriage also really matters to our society. It is mm-hmm. the fabric. It is the very basis of our society. And as we're seeing in this generation, the last generation, that being torn apart and the marriage is falling apart, mm-hmm. what that is doing to our society. And yeah. so it matters to the spouses. There's a security, a love, a ability, because I'm loved and I know that my husband's faithful and he knows I'm faithful. We're free to go out and be and to do. And our time and our thoughts are not all wrapped up in it. Oh, is he being faithful? It's a trust that's mm-hmm. there, and a security. They say that people who are married live longer. I guess mm-hmm. maybe we laugh at each other more. I'm not sure what. But
because you're comfortable.
That's
you know,
right.
You get comfortable and it's like, you know, it's just, you can be yourself. At least you should be able to be yourself in a marriage, because that person should never, I mean, in a perfect world, that person should not judge you, because right. In turn, you want to be judged yourself.
Definitely. And then lastly, marriage really matters to our kids. James Dobson said the most important relationship to any child is not their relationship with their mom or their relationship with their dad. Hmm. The most important relationship for any child is that relationship they see between their mom and their dad. Hmm. And because when that relationship is secure and kids know, I'm going to come home, mom's going to love dad, dad's going to love mom, that's tight, then I'm okay. And they're going to love me. Hmm. And so that's a really important relationship to our kids.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It provides a security net that
exactly.
if otherwise you're always wondering, is it going to be there? And unfortunately, so many kids deal with that on an ongoing basis.
Or if dad, even if dad left, did I make him leave? Am I unlovable? It goes even to the very root of the personality and self-esteem of the child.
Yeah,
when there's
and it
divorce
carries on to adulthood too. I've heard so many people talk about that as adults, as I've counseled women too, you know, just about the pressure they feel on themselves for what happened in their parents' relationship that probably had nothing to do with them at all, but they took that upon themselves because they had to somehow figure out why it happened, and it was the easiest way to solve that problem, and so it was just to dump it on myself. And
well, I think as a child, you think as a child, and a child is a self-centered world, and so even though it may not have had anything to do with the child is thinking, what did I do? What is wrong with me that caused this?
Right.
And we have to change that thinking as we become adults.
You know, it's interesting you talked about societies. When I was in Russia about 3 weeks ago and speaking at the Global Home Education Conference there, and the biggest thing that Putin's advisor spoke about was the need to build the family, because that was the core of society. So that's something our media doesn't talk about that they were saying over there. But they understand that concept and how important it is. And that's why they're pushing home education, is because the family unit they see as the strength of their country.
Right. And I would say that that goes all the way out to aunts and uncles, grandparents. In our society, we've gotten to where we're so transient that we have kids and grandparents everywhere, and we don't have that built-in support group as a family anymore, unless we're in a church and with a good, healthy church family.
Right. And that puts a lot of strain on our marriage, too.
Yes, it does.
Because it's put down to just two people to support a family unit that was meant to be supported by an extended group of people.
Yes, ma'am.
Like you said, a church does fill that need, though. And that's something that we've used, too. And my in-laws were much older, and so they never really had the ability to help out much with our kids before they passed away. And then my parents have adopted 10 children after I left home.
Wow.
And so they're all special needs. Wow. And that really didn't leave a whole lot of time for grandparent time for my kids. But, you know, that was God's plan. And, you know, our church became that extended family for us. And that's how we filled that need, so that we could support our marriage. Definitely.
Well, and as women, I think we need to recognize we need each other. If you go into your marriage thinking that your husband is going to meet all your needs, you're going to be get a quick awakening, because he's not God. He can't meet your needs. You've got to go to God first. And then it's okay to have girlfriends. God created us women especially to need those relationships. And it's when we're relying so heavily on our men that, you know, expecting them to meet our needs when that never should have been put upon them like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved MOPS International when I was had younger kids. I was an area coordinator for them for a couple of years. And that was my net of women. And now it's my Bible study. You know, I get together with my precepts ladies every week, and that that fills that social piece that I need. That my husband is an introvert and he prefers to just stay at home, and I need to get out. So,
and so that helps those outside relationships, is actually helping your marriage, because you have them to rely on and to work with. To meet some of those needs.
Now, you talk about marriage being the hub of a wheel. What do you mean by that?
If you think back to when they had the old Conestoga wagons out on the prairie, those big round wheels, and there was the hub right in the center, and then from it went all the spokes. If our family is a wheel, our marriage has to be that hub. There might be a broken spoke. It might be our ministry. It might be we're changing jobs. It might be a child with special needs that's maybe in the hospital. We can have three or four broken spokes, but that wheel will still be solid.
Yeah.
But if that hub is broken, if the very center is broken, then none of the wheel will function.
That's a very good point. Yeah, it'll just collapse.
It will just collapse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could try and hold it up and try and keep doing all those things with the broken hub, but it's very, very difficult.
Well, on the same token, too, we tend to put more pressure on those spokes than we do on the hub.
Yes.
You know, by putting energy into our kids or into all these other things, and we forget about that middle piece.
That's right. We have to be offensive about our marriage and not defensive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not giving our husband the crumbs or thinking, well, we'll work on that once the kids are grown.
Mm-hmm.
But that's got to be our priority. First God, then marriage, then these wonderful little beings that God gave us as children. And it's easy, especially with having special needs children in the home, to put that, prioritize it, because yeah. It just seems to take so much energy. Mm-hmm. And so much consideration. So my husband and I, we always made sure we had time together alone at least once a week. And we would talk about our kids and their issues and work on all those things. But after a time, it was okay, no more kid talk.
Yeah.
And then we would sit across from each other and focus on what each other were doing and what we were doing and what our mm-hmm. dreams were and mm-hmm. things like that. So I recommend, you know, yes, if you're going on a date, talk about the kids for the first half hour. Mm-hmm. And then draw a line.
Right. Yeah. So. And, you know, it's so simple, too. I mean, like, we go for a walk now in the evenings, which is nice because we have older kids. We couldn't do that when they were younger. But when they were really young, we just pushed them in the strollers, you know, and then
that was
our talk time. And even like tonight, my husband surprised me. He actually was home. He's working on the other side of Houston and living down there. And he had to come home this evening. It was so nice.
But I bet.
We just grabbed a cup of coffee. And when the kids were done with dinner, we just stayed and sat and had coffee. I mean, it can really be that easy, even when they're in the house, to spend that dedicated time and teach your kids how important it is that mom and dad have that time. And then you'll get time too.
Right. But that's good patterning for them for later in their own marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to remember, we're teaching them how to be married. Even at ages 3, 4, 5, and 6, they're mm-hmm. looking to us to see what does parenting look like? What does marriage look like? And so they need to see mom and dad being somewhat affectionate. They need to see mom and dad enjoying each other in that friendship.
Yeah.
And working together in partnership.
Mm. Now, those are some words that you had as highlights as the three relationships that that marriage focuses around. And
that's right. I think every marriage is made up of those three relationships. You've got the friendship, which hopefully is why you dated your husband in the first place. And then the partnership, which consists of, you know, doing the taxes and making the meals and just doing life, getting life done. And then there's the romance aspect to it, which is the third relationship. And as I have interviewed and talked with and counseled many women over the last several years, I see a cycle where most of us have two of those things pretty good in our marriage, mm-hmm. and we struggle with the third one, and it could be any of the two. I have a son and daughter-in-law, love them to death. They're just neat people. We enjoy being with them. They are the best friends and the best lovers in the world. They don't work so well together in partnership. So that's their struggle, what they're working on.
They have to work on
My husband and I, we're best friends. We can partner with anything. We can work together 24/7. We have to focus on remembering that we're also lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you have to kind of stop and say, okay, where are we at in our relationship? Which one of those is our weakness?
Mm. That's a good point,
to
figure out which is which so that you can really focus on that. Because otherwise it seems ambiguous as to, you know, what is really going on. But if you can classify into one of those three categories, it makes it a little easier to say, oh, I can see where I'm struggling. Yeah, exactly. And where we can focus. I love that.
I worked with one lady who, they were great, great lovers, great partners, but she didn't feel like they were being friends. And so we just sat down and said, okay, what do you like to do together? What did you used to do together? And they had 4 children under the age of 8 at home. They were busy. Mm-hmm. But she said, I just miss going for a bike ride. I miss mm-hmm. reading a book and talking about it together. And just stop back and say, okay, what is it a friend does? And what did we do when we were dating? What was that friendship like? Mm-hmm. And then very offensively go on, you know, go on the offense and say, okay, let's, how can we bring this back into the marriage?
Yeah. And that's such a good point. I mean, you've been using those words offense and defense, and I just want to point them out because that is so important. We're always so much on the defense because of disagreement, you know, and not looking at what we do agree on and working right on that instead. Because it's so easy to look at what you don't agree with.
Right. they kind of blare right in our faces, right?
Exactly. Oh. So, you know, a lot of times it comes down to communication. And just maybe communication skills we never learned growing up, and we brought that into our marriage, or mm-hmm. maybe it was, you know, how it was modeled in our home that was wrong.
Right.
and we don't even see it that way. And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about just different ways to approach and even see how communication may be an issue.
Well, let me tell you a story.
Okay.
We were first married and lived in our first little apartment, and we were in love, and I was just working so hard to make him good meals and, you know, to be the good wife. And I would put a nice meal on the table, and he always got up and went and got something else, be it the butter, the salt, or something. I, you know, it's like, okay, I just forgot that. Mm-hmm. And when meal time was over, I'd say, well, how was it? And he'd say, well, it was fine. And I'm thinking, oh, well, I put a lot of work into that. So this went on for about a week, 7-8 days of, well, it was fine. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, this is not going well. I'm working really hard here. I'm needing more than that. And so I looked up the word fine in the dictionary. Hmm. Fine means of exquisite value. So the next day when my husband looked at me and said, well, that was fine, I looked at him, I gave him a great big smile, and I said, oh, well, thank you so much. And he looked at me like I'd lost my mind. And I said, well, fine means of exquisite value. And he said, it is, it really is. It's really good. It's wonderful. But he didn't have that same definition. Mm-hmm. Another time it was the word help. I would say, honey, come help me with this, which in my mind meant he would come alongside and do what I needed him to do. In a man's mind, it means come in and take over. So we had some interesting communication discussion on some terms, you know, making sure that the expectations are the same on the understanding of our words.
Mm-hmm. And early in on a marriage, that is so difficult because you have so many different perspectives you're bringing in from a different lifestyle, a different culture usually.
Yes.
And you're trying to bring those same words, which may mean something completely different, like you said, from one household to another. And not get stuck in, this is what I think I'm saying.
Right.
And
I think you can do something that we call speak backs. So if my husband says something to me and I'm either offended by it or not certain about it, I'll look at him and I'll say, what I hear you saying is, and I'll say, well, and usually he's like, oh, no, that's not what I meant at all. For example, if I put on a new dress, I say, what do you think? Do you like it? And he says, yeah, I like some of your others better. And I would look at him and I would say, so what I hear you saying is that you think I look really bad in this dress and I'm getting fat, right? And he would say, no, I didn't say that at all. I just have other colors that I think you look better in, but that one is fine, you know? And so by speaking back what I think he's saying and how I'm interpreting what he's saying gives him the opportunity then to clear that up. And that can keep you from having a whole lot of miscommunications.
Right. Because you take that, and a lot of times us women, you know, we'll either blurt out something right away because we're offended, or we'll stuff it in and then just mull over it and, you know, let it go until our fuse just can't take it anymore and blow up then. And then the guys are going like, what just happened? I don't even understand. It's probably a couple days later that happened. So,
and the Bible does tell us in Romans not to be easily offended.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that takes practice. It yes. takes learning some discipline to mm-hmm. to when we are offended, to step back, shut our mouth for a minute and go, okay, why did that offend me? Mm-hmm. Was that, you know, am I taking it the way it was meant? Is this something he's just having a bad day and needing to, you know, deal with? And then right. we can have that communication without that first blurt that just escalates.
Right. Yeah. I find that, you know, I have learned how to take things to God in prayer first before I blurt anything out, because I definitely usually see things the wrong way, and I've learned that because I'm a very reactionary, defensive person. I am that fight, not flight type, and I found that out. And so, you know, taking it to God is a safe place to take it,
right?
Because then it doesn't hurt anybody. And by the time I've got it figured out and he's disciplined me in the process, I can then take it back to my husband in a much more cool and calculated right. way, and really discuss it instead of having the anger that may have came with it.
Right.
I'm writing a series right now on parenting anger, which was a whole different subject, but it was a huge battle that I had to go through that God has healed. But yeah, it's that requires a lot of prayer in my life, because it comes with a lot of explosive energy, unfortunately.
Well, and usually in a marriage, there's that side, and then there's the one that would rather repress, hide, or flight. Mm-hmm. And so right there is another opportunity for conflict, and for the partners to realize the other one might need some time to process. Mm-hmm. Especially as women, we need to remember our men might need some process time. Put a bug in their ear, back off for a while. Say something else, then back off. Give them time to process. Or if it's the wife that tends to shut down rather mm-hmm. than talk through, if the husband's constantly, no, we've got to deal with this, we need to deal with it now, that's right. just going to bring the defenses up. So understanding mm-hmm. our spouse's way of reaction, the way they react to things, and giving them the room and the right to react mm-hmm. differently than we do. And I think that touches upon abuse right there. Abuse is really any time someone is not allowed to have their own thoughts, opinions, or feelings about something. How does that look in a marriage? In a marriage, we should both be free to feel differently, to think mm-hmm. differently, to have different opinions, to verbalize them together in a non-aggressive way, and right. to lay them all out and then look mm-hmm. at them, because we bring in intuition and we bring in sensitivity, where they bring in mm-hmm. a lot of times the fact. And it's God put us together, because together we're one whole. We're
exactly.
complete.
And you have to appreciate it instead of being offended by it.
Yes.
I so love my husband's perspective, because it is so different than mine. It's taken me a long time to appreciate that. I have to admit. But, you know, oftentimes I get so tunnel vision focused that it takes him to say, you know, you really need to step back and look at this differently. And I've learned to listen to that. And that helps me so much, because he's not in the middle of usually what I'm in the middle of, and can right. give me that perspective. But I have to respect that he's going to have to step in and tell me that.
Right. Sometimes we can't see the forest because of the trees. We're so busy homeschooling kids, doing dishes, laundry, job on top of that. And we can get very tunnel visioned, and we need that person to come along and give us the big shot, the where we've come from, where we're going to mm-hmm. kind of get our heads up out of the trees to say, okay, there's a sky up here.
Yeah,
it's bigger than just the next 10 things on your list that have to get done.
Exactly. Or say, you need to step out right now.
Yeah.
And go
exactly.
take a break. And to respect that is true. That's what I need to do. It's
right.
not going to get solved by me just pushing harder.
And I want to bring in here too, I found in our relationship with each other, if there was a triangle here, and mm-hmm. God is at the apex,
yeah.
and my husband and I are out here on the sides,
mm-hmm.
as we're drawing closer to God, each of us drawing closer to God, we're also drawing closer to each other.
Yes.
And so if one of us is growing towards God, we're actually coming farther apart. And so it's so important that we're encouraging each other in that walk with the Lord, so that as we're both growing, we can come together more and more. Because like you said, I've learned over the years. You know, we've said that several times.
Yes.
And it's true. It is a learning, and it is a progressing, and it is a growing together.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's so nice to have that faith, that shared faith, because especially when huge things happen in our lives, both, you know, like this move that we're going through right now, you know, both my husband and I knew God was stirring something up. And so when that happened, we weren't in conflict with each other. We were on the same page because God had us on the same page. And we didn't have to even hardly even discuss what the options were. We already knew because God had already settled that in each of our hearts. And so, yes, that takes your marriage relationship beyond the, you know, just even trying to work things out yourself. God works those things out in your own, in each of your hearts, to make sure they come together. Because like you said, marriage is important to Him, and He's not going to make you fight with one another.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes we have to back up and say, okay, you know, we're not agreeing on this. Let's pray about it for a day or two, and then let's get together. And almost always across the board, we come right back together with the same monetary figure, the same idea, the same direction.
Because
God is working in both of us. Mm-hmm. But it's hard when you're in a marriage and that's not there. One partner is leaning towards God and seeking God, and the other one is just not, you know, there. And in that situation, I encourage, if you're the one that's on your knees and praying, keep praying. God is a God of redemption. He's a God of grace, and He will work in those situations in spite of us sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It's so tempting to butt in and try to do God's work for Him. And that is completely against how it's actually going to work, because in trying to do that, we're like Sarah, who tried to, you know, solve the problem with Abraham. And yes, God said, we're going to have a child. So here, have my handmaiden. No, that's really not the way God wanted it to work. We need to wait on God, and He will make His plan come about in His timing.
Right. And so the best thing we can do is to be at peace with each other as best we can. Until God stirs the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
Right.
Yeah. So let's see. You had three don'ts. What are those?
The three don'ts for us women in marriage are complain, criticize, and show contempt. Our men need respect. Yeah. And when we do any of those three things, complain, criticize, or show contempt, we're showing disrespect.
Yeah.
The complaining, the nagging, well, why don't you ever, and why don't you always? And I would say, be careful of those exaggeration words. That's not usually truth anyway. Usually it's, you know, he may have done it a couple of times, or we're pulling back the past. Mm-hmm. But that constant complaining can really wear on our men, especially when they're doing everything that they can and as a human being humanly possible, and we're just never satisfied. Usually that shows a problem not with the marriage or with our husband. It usually shows a problem with our own heart, our own contentment, our own finding our peace with God, finding time for praise and understanding who God is and what He has done. Because when we're content and able to accept, then we're not complaining. And that goes along with the criticizing. Usually that's a hard issue with the woman. If I'm always criticizing my husband, it's because either I'm comparing him with all these wonderful men and all these romance novels I've been reading, or that superhero on TV, or so-and-so's husband who just won an award, and so then we begin to be dissatisfied with the man that God gave us, and then we become critical. And so it's really important in that situation to keep our eyes on our husband, not holding him up to everybody else. There's an old saying, if you compare, you will despair. It's not about, you know, well, he's not doing this and like this person is, but mm-hmm. God has given me this person and what can we do together to make things work? And then that last one, that showing contempt, is just, mm-hmm. it gets really to the heart of our men, to the very personality of our men. When we're showing contempt, it's it's just tearing him down.
Yeah.
Tearing him down. The Bible tells us that our words can either bring life or it can bring death. And that is bringing death to our husbands. Mm-hmm. And then we expect them to go out there and win the world for us.
Right. We can't do both. Yeah.
Can't do mm-hmm. both.
Yeah. So. You know, and that's, you know, the Bible does tell us too, to honor our husbands. And I responded to a question somebody sent me last night about, you know, and she said, what are your top three things? And I said, honor. And that means that you place them where you want them. You mm-hmm. build them up to that point. So they have to reach the level that you are talking that they are at, because they will strive for that if you give them
as long as that's realistic, right?
Yes,
realistic expectation,
but you honor them as they mm-hmm. should be honored, and tearing them down is the opposite.
Right.
And oftentimes we just naturally do that and think, well, the deceiver has told us that's the way it works, you know, but it doesn't.
Right.
It
no, doesn't work. They need our respect, our honor. They need our words to build them up. Their ego is based upon a lot of times affirmation, mm-hmm. saying those positive words. And when was the last time you looked at your husband and just said, you know, all these years you have provided so well for us. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I saw you handle such and such the other day, and I was so proud of the way you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I know that when I'm struggling with something, I know that you've got my back.
Yeah.
And just saying those words to our husband mm-hmm. can make them feel like they can go out and win the world for us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then they'll give.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, need to watch those complaining, criticizing, and that showing of contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before we continue on, I just want to let our viewers know, if you have any comments or questions, make sure you put them in the feed. We've got about 20 minutes left. So definitely do that, because we want to make sure to get to anything that you want to talk about also. So so I want to go on to the five do's now that you gave me.
We've already covered a couple of them. The first one is respect. The Bible tells us in Ephesians, women, love your husbands. I'm sorry, men, love your wives, women, respect your husbands.
Right.
And God, as he created us, realized that those are our specific needs. I need to be loved. I need to be cherished. I love that word. I don't want to just be loved. I want to be cherished. I want to be held up as something special. But in order for my husband to do that, he has to be filled up with respect.
Yeah.
And so if I want to get my needs met in that way, then I have to meet his needs. And it's that love respect cycle there that mm-hmm. does that. And that respect is, you know, when we don't agree on something, stepping back and saying, you know, I'm not seeing it your way, but I respect your authority in this, or I respect mm-hmm. your expertise mm-hmm. in this. And I'm going to step back and let's try it your way. And then you get 100% behind them.
Yeah.
And so the first one is respect. The second one is those words of affirmation. Our men need to be affirmed. And you cannot do enough of that. Gary Smalley talks about the five love languages.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of mm-hmm. way to affirm our men is to understand their love language. And you may have to help me out here. There's time, words, mm-hmm. gifts,
oh boy.
I know this. Touch and time. Mm-hmm. I said time.
You said time.
But my husband's
yeah.
My husband's is ice cream. I said he didn't hit that one. It's food. If he loves you, he will feed you. If he really loves you, he will give you ice cream. Ice cream was the answer to everything.
Sounds like my children.
Yeah. If somebody needed an X-ray, they got ice cream. If somebody won something and we're celebrating, we need ice cream. So his love language is ice cream. So, you know, I can affirm him. His service is the other one. My husband's love language is service. So I affirm him when I serve him. which is really hard to do when you have a service spouse, because he's so busy serving me, I have to really struggle to find things to do for him. But just laying out his underwear and t-shirt while he's taking a shower for him, he thinks I'm the best wife ever. And so kind of knowing those love languages and affirming him through his love language, if it's touch, going up and rubbing his shoulders, if it's time, putting down the book and watching football with him, you know.
That's my husband's time. And so definitely, you know, putting away my busy stuff and making time for him is so important to him.
So important.
Yeah.
The third do is just to remind each other the good times and of God's hand and what God has done in your life and in your marriage. Often we're quick to forget the good things when we're in the midst of the bad things.
And so true.
God says over and over in his word, remember when I did this. Remember when my hand brought the Israelites through. And it's good to have those conversations with each other in the marriage. Do you remember when God did this? He did it then. He's going to do it now.
Yep.
We're also facing a move and a change and some other things. And, you know, we know God's got this because he has in the past. And I know my husband's got this because he has in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so reminding each other of, you know, we've been through this. We've moved 33 times houses in 33 years. So it's, you know, he's like, it's not a big deal, Derry. You know, I know you can pack up and move in 2 days. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal. And remembering those times and those can bolster us.
Yeah, definitely. That's what my husband said to me the other day was, you know what, this is our sixth move and God's handled them all up to this point. So he's going to handle this one too. We're just praying our house isn't on the market for a year like it was one time.
Oh, goodness.
You handle that.
And that doesn't negate our emotions. It's still okay to have the emotions in the midst of that, but there's a firm, solid foundation of saying, yeah, God's got this, and to remind each other of that. Number four is showing appropriate affection towards each other in front of our children. Our kids need to see us grieve. They need to see us be sad. They need to see us pull together when times are tough. They need to see us giggle and tickle and laugh with each other. Inappropriate ways in front of our kids. I save my deepest grief, my deepest depression in the bedroom with my husband alone. But it's not wrong for my kids to see that mom's sad today, because that gives them, first of all, the opportunity for them to realize those emotions are normal. That just because they're having that emotion this minute doesn't mean that emotion is going to be there the next minute or the next. You know, that we're going to work through this together. They need to see the whole situation played out and mom and dad still loving each other all the way through it.
Right. And so also even as far as, you know, forgiveness goes too.
Yes.
You know, elevating yourselves as perfect or having nothing going on in front of your children also does not set up a good example. You know, to have the reality of we always don't agree, but it doesn't mean that we fight, you know, like cats and dogs in front of our children either. But it allows them the ability to say, well, I don't always agree with things and I can have my own opinion and work it out with other people in a godly manner. And like you said, they're always watching us and that's where they're going to learn. It's learning by watching, not learning by doing, you know, that's the harder way to do it.
Right. And the deeper forgiveness, as well as the, what we call, you know, frivolous things is, you know, I stepped on his toe. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, just that general courtesy of some of those things. And I see that lacking sometimes in marriage, just the general courtesy to one another. But then that last thing, and I want to talk about this for just a minute, is from the time your child's born, you need to begin to prepare for empty nest. And that sounds funny, but how many marriages fall apart when the kids have left home? The mom and dad are sitting next across from each other, the husband and wife, and are looking at each other saying, now, who are you? Now, what do we do? You know, we filled our lives so much up with the kids. We made them such a priority. We almost made them a god or worship them. And now that they're gone, I don't know who I am. You may not know who you are. So who are we together? And that is a real point in marriage where marriage often breaks down, where once you push past that 20 to 30 year mark in marriage, most marriages stay together and can actually be quite happy and quite fulfilling if we're prepared for that. So, you know, even if your children are 2 and 3 and 4, you need to begin now with that relationship with your husband, preparing for those days. And you do that by continuing to be on the offensive, like we've said, with those relationships. You know, keep growing your friendship. Keep growing that partnership. Learn something new together. Have adventures. Life can be fun. Marriage can be fun. But we've got to seek those opportunities.
It's a work in progress. And I think we have to see it that way. It isn't just something that, you know, you got married and now you're together and that's, we'll call it good. You know, we just live life now and, you know, happily ever after is, you know, how it goes. But that's really not it. It's a day in and day out, something that you work on. And
that's right.
But, you know, as we both know, being married long, that it becomes sweeter and better every year.
It does.
Just because you have worked on it and you can see the fruit of that. And there's that comfort level that increases even more every year because you can be yourself and that other person understands you even better. And you understand yourself with that person better.
That's true. I mean, we're both growing. We're growing and changing. And as we grow next to each other, we entwine like two vines that are planted next to each other until they become one vine. Yeah. And in these later years, and I don't mind sharing, I'm 53. So we've been married 33 years. We got married at 20. Those vines are together and, you know, the opportunities of having misunderstandings or discussions of arguments is just so much less because we're in tune with each other because of the things that we've gone through in the past. Those times when I would be like, oh no, the weekend's coming. What am I going to do with my husband all weekend? I wish he'd just go back to work. And I had those days. So now it's 11:30. He should be home for lunch anytime. I can't wait to tell him this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Going through those times for what's so sweet on this end of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's really what, for those of you that have not been married for a long time, what you have to look forward to.
That's right.
But it is, it's definitely work. And I can't say it's always been easy, but it's good.
That's right. It is good.
Good is not always, I mean, we look at how God calls, you know, everything he does is good, but yet we go, how can this be good? But on the flip side, you look at it from a different perspective and you see how going through something as a person, you know, is on your own path or in your relationships does make it better.
That's right.
But you have to keep walking one step at a time and taking and trusting that God is going to turn that to good. You know, we often see our, you know, our marriages, but also with our children, that these hard things are something we just want to get up and leave from because they are so hard. But
that's true. But those are the times, you know, we say, at our house, character over circumstances. Mm-hmm. God is more interested in building our character and drawing us to him and making us more like him than he is in making us comfortable. We would prefer he make us comfortable. Just make it easy, God. Make, you know, fill my little needs. And he's saying, you know, I want you to go through this because I want you to grow stronger. Not only for this life, but for the life to come. It says we're going to be judging nations and angels. He's got big plans for us, and I want to be ready.
Exactly. Yep. And if I can look at it from that hope and that perspective, you know, anything is possible to get through.
That's right.
Because you just cling to God and you just do one step at a time and know that it's all going to work out for good. I mean, those are the ones I had the big struggles with my oldest, you know, when he was really in the mess of just being diagnosed with Asperger's. I kept saying to God, you promised this was going to be good.
It's not feeling very good right now.
It's not feeling really good. No. But now looking back, it was so good. Just how he's used that. So you had a couple things on your website, how to fight fair. And I definitely wanted to make sure we get to those.
Yes, if you go to our website and go over to, resources, down to convention notes, you'll see some PDFs there, and there's one called How to Fight Fair.
Yeah, let me pull this up. I'm going to show you on the screen, and let's see if I can make this.
It should be under Marriage Matters.
There we go. Yep. And so,
right.
There we go. That one. Oh, and then it pulls it up in a different thing. It's a PDF.
So anyway,
that's what the page looks like.
Yes. But, and what that is giving you some strategies before you begin to communicate, when you're struggling with something with your spouse, before you bring up something that you know is going to be a discussion, before you communicate, settle in your heart that it's not about making an attempt to establish your own superiority. Mm-hmm. It's getting together to figure this out and to listen as well as to give your opinion.
Yes.
if there's anger involved, you know, you feel like he slighted you or did you wrong or did something you shouldn't have, make sure that your angry responses are constructive. And again, listening, giving positive feedback, and also being aware of the responsiveness of the recipient, knowing when to bring up a subject. When your husband first walks in the door at 5 o'clock and there's four kids climbing him, is not the time to tell him this. You know, there's something to be said about those movies where the lady lays out a nice dinner and lights some candles and then springs upon her husband. So there's some strategies there before you communicate. And then there's some strategies there as you communicate, discriminating essential from your non-essential. Not bringing the whole past back up. Allowing your husband to be becoming just as you are becoming, and not holding him to the things he did 5-10 years ago.
Great.
Confronting problems as soon as possible, sticking to the subject, being honest about your feelings. This one is really important, to use those I statements instead of the you statements. When you said that, I felt that you were saying, or I felt really sad when this happened, not you said this, you meant this, and you hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will just put them on the defensive. And that's not the goal of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Avoid those terms of exaggeration, you always, you never. And whether it's with your children or with your husband, refrain from character assassination. This is stick to the issue, not the person. In other words, I can tell my child or my husband, well, that was a stupid thing you did.
Mm.
But I never say you are so stupid or you're dumb or assassinating the character. But we can talk about maybe some stupid or dumb things that both of us have done. So goes both ways there. Goes both ways.
Exactly.
Listen to understand, because a lot of times it's just a misunderstanding.
Right. Those things you talked about earlier.
Sometimes it's a matter of giving yourself some time limits. Say, you know, this argument could carry on for the next 2 hours, but that's too long. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this for half an hour, back away, think about what each other said, give some each other some space, process time, and then let's get back together.
Yeah.
Don't ask the loaded questions. Well, you know, this happened. So what were you thinking? You know, that's a loaded question. keep a positive attitude and remember that winning is not the goal. It's
so
coming together to figure out how we can move forward in this situation, how we can get on the same page, and what we can do to move forward rather than trying to win when we're fighting.
Right. Yeah. That is.
And those are all on that sheet.
Mm-hmm.
That PDF.
Yeah. So that is abidingtruthministry.com. And again, it's under your resources tab.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Resources, conference notes, and then down to Marriage Matters.
Awesome. And then there was the other one was respect means.
This was an amazing, it actually came out of Peter Scazzaro's book called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. Peter Scazzaro, S-C-A-Z-Z-E-R-O, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And this was really good as a parent with my children, but also with my husband. And it just goes through and talks about in different situations what respect means. And it starts off saying respect means I give myself and others the right to their space and privacy, to being different. I give myself and others the right to disagree. It's okay if you don't if you don't agree with me. You have that right. Respect means I give myself and others the right to be heard, those thoughts, feelings, emotions, to be taken seriously. Especially if we have a clown in the house, or if our husband is, my husband has the driest wit, and sometimes I'm not sure if he's being serious or not.
Serious or yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Sometimes I have to ask.
The same issue.
Respect means I give myself and others the right to be given the benefit of the doubt, checking out the assumptions. I give myself and others the right to be told the truth. You know, sometimes I want to protect him by not telling him the truth, but that right there is going to be a roadblock to working through the situation. Yeah. I respect him enough to tell him the truth of how it made me feel or how I'm feeling or some thoughts that I had, sharing maybe a little deeper with him than I would others. Respect means I give myself and others the right to be consulted. I don't ever volunteer my husband for anything without asking him first. If a decision is going to affect somebody else, I always consult. Respect means I give myself and others the right to be imperfect and to make mistakes. That's grace. Grace. We've got to give our husbands grace. We've got to give ourselves grace. And realize we are human. We are not perfect. We have not made it yet. One of these days, but we're not there yet.
And long way to go. Yeah.
And then just two others. Respect means I give myself and others the right to courteous and honorable treatment, which we kind of covered. And we give each other the right to be respected, taking each other's feelings into account. And that was just a really good guideline. As I began to look, I have one child, one of my Asperger's children, as early as 4 and 5, he demanded to be respected. And that authority, he thought he was in charge and he demanded the respect. And I could fight with him demanding respect, or I could, you know, you want to earn a respect with a 5-year-old, it should be there. But what I found is as I gave him respect in those areas, that his respect began to naturally be built.
That's funny you say that. I just finished writing a blog that's going to come out on Saturday about humble authority and how to establish it with your children. And it's by serving them and getting down at their level. Because at that point, your child, and this is part of my parenting anger series that I'm doing, because oftentimes when you blow up on your children, you lose authority with them. Because they become to fear you and you have to reestablish it. And so with both of my kids, getting down and participating in something that they love to do, maybe not that I love to do, earned their authority because they realized that I cared enough to do something with them. And I think this is really applicable to marriages too. If you are always into your stuff and not what your husband does, there's very little exchange of, you really care about me, and that what you say, you know, really has any, you know, has taken into account anything that I care about. Because when you share in things, you then share the ability to trust and to give that person more of your life.
And as you're giving to them, curling up next to them while they're watching a football game, even though you're really not interested in football, they recognize that. And they're going, okay, she loved me. What can I do to serve her? It's, you know, it's that cycle. It's that cycle.
Definitely is.
The book, I can see if I find my notes on my books here. There's 5 books that I had recommended, but the one of them is His Needs, Her Needs, by Willard Harley. And he lays out the top 10 needs of women and the top 10 needs of men. And they're not the same. They're very different, and I don't have them written out in front of me here. But when we're meeting his needs, that frees him up to meet our needs, which frees us up then to meet his needs, which frees up him to meet our needs. And so if your needs aren't being met in your relationship with your husband, stretch out, be the one to step out and go, okay, my needs aren't being met, but I'm gonna be the one to say, what can I do to meet your needs? And as you begin pouring in and fulfilling those needs, then in return, you'll see a totally different. I speak on marriage sometimes, and I always start off, I used to have a husband who was discontented, unloving, and distracted. And now I have this wonderful, amazing husband who's engaged and is interested. I did not kill my first husband or divorce him. What I did do is change my reactions to him. Mm-hmm. And as I changed my reactions, and I became fun-loving, engaged, and loving, and exciting and fun, mm-hmm. I saw his reactions to me change.
Yes.
And that's a huge thing for some of us. And, you know, be willing to take that first step. It's not working like it is. What can I do differently? And right. say, what can I do to meet my husband's needs? What can I do to be fun loving? Mm-hmm. What can I do to initiate something in the marriage?
Yeah. When we focus, it's like the, what is it? The speck in the eye versus the log in your own. And yeah. We focus too much on what's wrong with the other person when we don't look at ourselves first.
Right.
You know, yes, there may be things wrong with your spouse, but there's a lot wrong with you first of all, and that's start right. working with God on those things. And he is so good to tell you what's wrong with you when you spend time with
Oh, yes.
I'm like in just in tears going, really? Have I been missing that? And oh, goodness, I need to change now. My team hears that all the time. I write a devotional for them every week, and it's usually pick out my favorite of that one thing God told me that I really didn't want to hear that week, and they get to
right.
hear. So it humbles
me. He keeps us humble. I was going to say, he keeps us humble. And we need to be humble before our spouse.
Yes.
You know, that's a big part of having that contentment, of working together, of listening, not pushing forth our superiority, but being humble. And that doesn't mean, as women, that does not mean being a doormat. It doesn't mean the submissiveness of, you know, being stepped on. It means I have a voice, I have an opinion, I have feelings. We're going to listen and respect each other. But when it all comes down to it, at the very end, I'm going to get behind my husband and the final choices.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. Yeah. Well, we are over our hour. This has been so wonderful. No, I we could probably talk for hours more. So, but I just don't think we'll fit it onto a podcast if we do. So we may have to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us. I have appreciated it too. And it's definitely made me think I've got to keep going on. And especially with this time with my husband living away from me most of the week, it's
right.
Marriage takes extra work when he's working on the other side of Houston, which is like its own state. So anyway. but thank you again, and we definitely appreciate it. And definitely make sure you check out all of Dara's resources on abidingtruthministry.com. So,
yes.
And also make sure that you check out our resources at spenthomeschool.com. We have a lot of things that go up there new every week, actually, and including these videos, the podcast. You can find those on there, our YouTube channel, Instagram, all different ways you can connect with us.
Can I mention real quick, I do have two women's Bible studies that are out, Living Beautifully, yeah. Practical Proverbs for Women, Book 1, and Living Gracefully, Practical Proverbs. The first one is a study through Proverbs 1 through 9, and the second one is a Proverbs study 10 through 31, and marriage is covered in both of those books, as well as parenting and relationships and humility and contentment and finding joy in the midst and all those women issues that we deal with, and those are available on our website.
Yeah, it's good to have a guide instead of just opening your Bible, and so I thank you for taking the time to write those, because it's so helpful to have someone guiding you along the way that's done the research and
to know that you can get through it and there's hope. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
I like to hear the overcomer stories.
Yes, definitely. I'm sure you do. It's God's word is so healing. If you've never delved into a Bible study, definitely check out one of her resources and start doing that, because that's how you really change. We can go through all these self-help books and it really does not change us. God is the healer. He actually heals and changes us from the inside out. That's what we need. Yeah.
And he will heal marriages.
Amen. Yes, he will. So awesome. Well, next week, I will be interviewing, Annie Nichols, and we're going to be talking about how to manage your day with, listen to these acronyms, ADHD, ASD, and SPD. So if you don't know what those are, you'll have to come back and join us next week. But anyways, we're going to be talking about that. And so in the meantime, keep up with the conversation with us at Sped Homeschool on our website, on our Facebook page, also in our support group. We keep the conversation going all week long on there. And also on Instagram and Twitter, we definitely put up posts there and interact with you there also. And we have a fundraiser going on right now to raise money for our interns. If you don't know, we have two high school homeschool grads with special needs who do all of our video editing and our graphic design. And so if you want to help contribute to us being able to pay them, we would love that. So definitely look on our Facebook page for that fundraiser that was started by Jill from our team. So thank you very much, and we will see you next week as we keep the conversation going.